The Walking Dead Talkthrough, Episode 64, Mercy Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talkthrough, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another brand new episode. The first episode in 6.5 months, if you don't count all the Fear the Walking Dead talk through episodes, I guess. But we're back, sort of. I'm Brian. And unfortunately, I know a lot of you have been waiting for Ruthie's return. You know, other than the one episode of Fear that she did, she hasn't been on here for quite a while, but unfortunately this week, she has taken ill and was unavailable to take, to record. So, you know, hopefully she'll be feeling better next week. But I am pleased to have a couple of guests with me tonight. First of all, I'd like to – oh, I should also mention Kyle wasn't available to record either. So – and Kyle, you know, he did a fantastic job, you know, taking over for Fear, The Walking Dead. And I also asked Laura, who, you know, was guest last week, but she was also unavailable, but I found Reese and Ben. So hi, you guys.
How's it going?
Hey,
that's going good. All right. Well, I know, you guys do podcasts out there too. So, Reese, I'll start with you. Why don't you, tell us a little about yourself and, tell people what podcasts you do.
Well, I host, it's a brand new podcast. It's called The Introverted Nerd Watches, where I choose a TV show and I podcast every single episode to my nerdy heart's delight. And right now I'm podcasting about Saved by the Bell, but in a few days, I think Friday or Saturday, I'm going to be doing Stranger Things.
Ah, Stranger Things. That's great. Yeah, there's there's a Stranger Things podcast on GSM called the Stranger Things podcast. It's been going on. And I know Ben, our friends, Rima and Sean are doing Stranger Indeed?
Stranger Indeed.
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing about multiple people podcasting the same show is that you get multiple opinions. So, you know, I know some people get discouraged when they hear like, oh, another podcast about Game of Thrones or, oh, another podcast about Walking Dead. And it's not the case at all. I love listening to different ones and getting different opinions on different things.
Yeah. So you also do podcast, Ben. So
I do. But no, as you said, I actually am the co-creator of a podcast network, in which we have about 11 or 12 podcasts currently on our network with, a number more getting ready to join in 2018. But I host or co-host two of them. One of them is the Showcast Spotlight, which is a celebrity interview podcast, which we've had over 150, 200 celebrities on. And the other one I do is a weekly DC TV podcast called DC Primetime, which we talk about The Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, and Legends every week.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
What is the name of your podcast network?
It's called the Next Level Network. And if I'm allowed, I can plug the website.
Yeah, go ahead.
All the podcasts that I mentioned that I'm a part of are, as well as all the other podcasts, nextlevelradioonline.com. There's links to subscribe to all of them under each podcast has its own page. So just go to the pages and you can find links to subscribe. Also, you can stream right directly on the web too, if you're not a podcast subscriber, like on iTunes or Google Play. And every show that we do, you can also be found whenever we post new ones on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/nextlevelradioonline.
And Reese, you might as well give your podcast information while we're out there.
Yeah. You can go to theintrovertednerd.com and all of the episodes are posted there. And you can go to Facebook, The Introverted Nerd. Just search for The Introverted Nerd and the page will come up and all the episodes are there too. And you can follow me on Twitter at TI Nerd Pod.
Oh yeah, we have one of them too, which is at NXT, the letters NXT Level Radio.
And since we're pimping the podcast, I might as well mention, if, you know, because I know a lot of listeners don't listen to us while Fear the Walking Dead's going on, and you might not know it, but I have been doing a new podcast with Adam, and it is on the new Star Trek Discovery. So, and it is simply called the Star Trek Discovery Podcast, and it's also a Golden Spiral Media podcast. And I think it's been actually going quite well so far. We've done 8 episodes so far. At the time of recording, the 8th one's not out yet, but it will be by the time you hear this. But anyway, Star Trek Discovery Podcast.com. And I think that's enough of us pushing other stuff tonight.
cheap plugs, as we call them on our podcast.
Yes. Anyway, we are here actually to discuss an episode of The Walking Dead, believe it or not. Season 8, Episode 1, which is titled Mercy. Written by the showrunner Scott M. Gimple and directed by executive producer and the go-to guy for many of the big episodes on the show, Greg Nicotero. All right, well, our first segment is news, ratings, and info. Shane, what do you have to say?
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
Really? All right. Well, first, some info about this show, this episode. Just a couple little things I picked up. You may have noticed at the end of the episode that the episode was dedicated to two people. John Bernecker, whose name you might not know, but he is unfortunately the stuntman who passed away on the set, you know, losing his life, falling from, I guess, about 30 feet, several months back. I think in July? And shortly after that, zombie godfather, George A. Romero passed away, so he was the second one that was dedicated. And I thought that was good on, you know, for both of them to do that, or for the show to do that for both of them, because, you know, obviously John Bernecker, because, you know, he lost his life while the show was being, aired. And I don't think this show would even exist if George A. Romero hadn't, essentially invented the zombie, you know, genre, at least the modern zombie genre with, you know, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I noticed in the opening credits, there were a few changes, namely a couple of promotions. Seth Gilliam and Ross Marquand have been added to the main credits, so they're now part of the main cast and not part of the also starring cast. And I noticed, I don't know if it was just these two, but two that I noticed where it had changed the images that play while their names appear. Danai Gurira looked like it was a different image of her katana. And Alana Masterson had showed the satellite dishes, which appear to be part of, you know, the raids going on right now, which last season it was a boat that you saw on Swear. So
I believe this is the first time that Michonne's katana has been in the opening credits.
Do you,
since she's come on the show.
Do you know what the backdrop was of her before that?
No, I don't remember what it was.
I'll have to go back and look. I wanted to do that before we recorded.
Yeah, I meant to do that too, but yeah. I do know that somebody mentioned to me that it's the first time her katana has been in the opening credits. Mm. And she's been on the show since season 3, so that's, and it's like really iconic, her katana, so
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was good that they changed it. But certainly happy to see Seth Gilliam and Ross Marquand get, you know, full billing now. There's also been some additional people that have gone from recurring to like also starring. So, and this is by no means a complete list, but I know Stephen Ogg, Kari Payton,
Judas.
Yes, I was going to say Pollyanna McIntosh and Caitlin Nakon. I know they've all been promoted. I don't know if anyone else has. I know those four have. But it's good to see, you know, that usually means that they're going to be on at least for a while. Although it's certainly not a guarantee.
That could all be a giant smokescreen to kind of throw the fans off.
Yeah.
Little bit.
It's not looking good for Gabriel.
No, yeah. I was going to say, Seth Gilliam already added to the main cast and already in question the way this episode ended.
Yeah. Two episodes and out.
Pretty much.
Yeah. There is an interesting article from Entertainment Weekly where they interviewed Scott M. Gimple. And a couple of things that were mentioned in there that I thought were interesting. The first is there was a little bit of an explanation of the Weird Al Yankovic song and why that was there. Apparently, that was thought that would be a song that Judith would like. So that's why they picked that particular song. They wanted something, you know, kind of odd and unusual, yet, you know, something that maybe a kid would like. So that's why they picked that.
I thought that was what it was.
Yeah. And then
I actually missed that the first time. I didn't even realize because it was so low in the background that I didn't notice it until I saw people posting about it, Weird Al included. And when I went back and rewatched the opening of it, I had to crank the volume a little bit, but I heard it.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. I was watching with closed captions, and I saw that it's Weird Al.
Yeah, playing. I had noticed it, you know, actually from the first listen, but you know, I had headphones on, and I sent a message to my wife, who, you know, doesn't watch the show, and I said, I just heard Weird Al Yankovic on Walking Dead, and she got a kick out of that. Yeah, so the other thing that I picked out of the article was some slight explanation of the what seems to be three timelines that were presented in this episode. So, and just hints that they are going to recur over the season. So we're going to keep going back to, you know, what I called future Rick and what I called sad Rick, or, you know, something Rick who looked like he had been crying. So
I actually have a theory about this, which I won't bring up now because I'm sure we'll probably talk about it later. But I do have a theory about what they're doing with that.
Yeah, I do too. I have a theory. So let's see if we're compatible with our theories. All right. So next, we go into ratings, and that's usually the nice added benefit of doing it on Tuesday night, because by Tuesday morning, the ratings are out. And the ratings are out for The Walking Dead, and I'm not going to play Price is Right, because they're not a total, you know, failure, but I will say this. Because they're not fantastic as far as The Walking Dead's concerned. It got a 5.03 in the 18 to 49, which most shows on TV would kill for that, with 11.439 million viewers. And I'm going to use the comparison of the last season finale, which got a 5.42 in 18 to 49. So it's actually less than the finale, with 11.314 million. So more people watched it than the finale, but less people, or less in the coveted 18 to 49 demographic. And I also took note of the previous season finale, which actually did quite well. It got third for the cable ratings for the night. It got a 1.92 in the 18 to 49 with 4.8 78 million. And that pretty much beats the pants off of the latest Fear the Walking Dead ratings. So anyway, it's certainly, you know, still number one, or, you know, at least on basic cable, number one. In some ways, I think Game of Thrones kind of eclipsed it over the summer, but it's still doing well. It's just not doing as well as it did. But I do have a theory as to why, at least for part of it.
I think the difference between season premieres from last season to this season, season 7 and season 8, is it can be summed up in one word, and that's cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, season 7 was led off by a huge cliffhanger from the end of season 6 with who was going to die at the hands of Negan. You had to tune in to find out. This year, you know, season 7 ended with, hey, we're going to war, but it wasn't exactly a cliffhanger. We kind of knew that was coming.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of weakened the premiere a little bit for this season.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I didn't even bring up the ratings for the cliffhanger, because, you know, yes, of course it didn't do as well as the season premiere a year ago. I mean, if it had gotten anywhere close to it, I would have been shocked. And by the way, it got an 8.36 in the 18 to 49.
Of course it did.
Yeah. With 17.03 million. So, yeah, that's great. And yeah, it's much more than this got, but I'm not surprised. Like, actually, this is the total number of viewers is about average with season 7. So it's pretty close. And I do have one theory why, which I'll get to in a minute once I give you the Talking Dead ratings, which were strangely separated. They usually don't do this, but they had them split out by hour one and hour two. So hour one seemed like it got a little bit of a tail off in hour two. I think people kind of got tired of watching, but it got a 2.08 in the 18 to 49. With 4.895 million. So it got on cable the second highest ratings of the night, for hour one anyway. Hour two was the fourth highest rated for the night, with 1.27 in the 18 to 49, with 3.152 million. Now, that's better than the finale's Talking Dead, but the reason for that is it didn't start until 11:30 because of what's the name of that stupid show? Into the Badlands. Yeah.
That show.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I never got into that show.
I never watched it either.
Yeah. So anyway, it got a 1.1 and 2.547 million. So certainly better than that, but you know, considering it was on quite a bit earlier, I would expect so. So, that's how that sums up those premiere ratings. That's the lowest in the 18 to 49 since season two. So season two was not as good, but every season since has been better. In viewers, that's the lowest since season three. Now, one big reason, though, I think, for the ratings, Sunday Night Football had a rematch of the Super Bowl. So I don't think you can completely discount that, because it got over 19 million. So the Falcons Patriots game, a lot of people were really interested to watch that. So I would expect the numbers to go up quite a bit when the live plus three ratings come out, and they usually come out on Sundays. So
yeah, that's what I expect too. I think this is where the live ratings are going to be around 10, 11 million. I think we passed the point where The Walking Dead is going to be 18, 19 million, or just, you know, they're on the downturn. It's the eighth season. So I just think this is expected.
Yeah, I agree. And it's worth saying, ratings across the board, with one exception, are lower for practically every show. Football, from, you know, 2 years ago to last year, was, I think, down 20% or something like that. And the declines in The Walking Dead were actually lower than the declines of football. So it actually did less bad than football's declines. And, you know, it actually, compared to other things, didn't decline as much. Now, the big exception is Game of Thrones, because in season 7 of Game of Thrones, the ratings were through the roof, and it got way higher, like literally was breaking records practically every week it was on. You know,
even when episodes were like leaked, there was still really high ratings.
Yeah. So, and you know, that doesn't even count like if you watch it on HBO Now or HBO Go, that it doesn't even count those ratings. So, you know, when you count that, those ratings, you know, Game of Thrones blows Walking Dead out of the water, I guess, but still.
Here's my thing about that. You know, you did have Sunday Night Football, which I'm sure didn't help the ratings for Walking Dead. And let's not forget the fan base of people who watch, you know, The Walking Dead and things like that. Not all of them are, you know, football fans and things like that. Another thing that was on Sunday night was there was also a WWE pay-per-view on Sunday night, TLC, which I gave up on WWE a while ago. But getting to your point about how ratings across the board are lower, that's kind of what happens when you oversaturate with all this other programming. Is, you know, we have shows on Netflix now. We have, yeah, you know, Netflix originals. We have Hulu originals. We have Amazon originals. And when you oversaturate the market with all these original shows and all these other ways and platforms to watch these shows, you're going to lose ratings because you're spreading your viewership out.
Yeah.
So I can see the ratings on the downturn with that. But one final point going on, you know, how Game of Thrones stayed strong and how, you know, Reese, how you had mentioned we're into season 8 with Walking Dead, and that's to be expected. I think one of the reasons why Game of Thrones ratings are so strong right now is because they've announced an end point.
Yeah.
We know where this story is going to go. People are now tuning in to see where this is going to end and how they're going to get to that end point. Walking Dead doesn't have an end point, so people are just kind of losing interest a little bit because, you know, this show could go on. And they even mentioned it on Talking Dead that we hope there's another 100 episodes. Personally, I don't.
That's crazy.
I, I honestly said it back in like season 3 or 4 when this show was in the height of its popularity, and having been someone who read the comic books for a long time, I had said 3 or 4 years ago that the end of All Out War is a perfect ending point for The Walking Dead. And the way this season is shaping up, we don't know how it's going to go. I don't see that happening, unfortunately. And you compare Walking Dead to another AMC show, Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad had an endpoint. They created a year that they knew they were going to end it. They finished their story and they went out on top while the ratings were still extremely strong. And I feel like Walking Dead might be one of those shows where it's going to get to the point they're going to jump the shark a little bit and the ratings are going to go down. And then they're going to say, okay, let's just wrap it up here. And at this point, it's kind of a little too late, too late.
And I think AMC, very good point on Breaking Bad. And that was another show that increased, you know, as it was going. And that last season blew the ratings out of the water for, you know, previous seasons. And I still say that those last 8 episodes were probably the best 8 sequential episodes that I've ever seen in any show.
Yeah, agreed. That was some of the best. That was one of the best final seasons I have seen of any television.
Yeah, show. It was. So well deserved in that case. And like, I agree with you. It's like, you know, if this, they love to, you know, I think, troll us and, you know, say, oh, the show's going to go on for 50 seasons. And it's like, I wish they would just shut the hell up and not say that kind of stuff. You know, I think they should just, you know, take a little humble pie and, you know, just understand that, you know, the show may need to end at some point. I don't think I'm ready to see it end, but I could see it ending after 10 seasons.
I could see it going about 2 or 3 more, because at that point, you're going to get into Game of Thrones territory where your show is overlapping and passing your source material.
Yeah.
And I mean, I honestly never thought that they would be up to All Out War already by season 8. They could have very easily stretched it out. But I think once you get to that point with Walking Dead, even though Kirkman is still involved, just the same way George R. R. Martin was with Game of Thrones, once you get to that point where you're overlapping your source material, it's time to come up with an endpoint.
Yeah.
They have been stretching this show out, though. I mean, Maggie's still pregnant. She doesn't even look pregnant.
Don't even get me started on that.
Since season 5, we're like 2 weeks away from season 5, I believe. Oh my god. They've been stretching this out enough.
It cracks me up how Judith is like 3 years older, but Maggie's still in her second trimester.
Yeah. Yeah, well, specifically, I know it was mentioned, I think it was actually season 6 premiere. Well, actually, it wasn't mentioned. It was hinted at and, you know, finally revealed later. But still, that's, you know, that's going into the 3rd season. I mean, you know, how long is she going to be pregnant? Are people pregnant for like 3 years in this universe?
Apparently.
Well, and she's not even showing, you know, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, because it's been. She said she's in her second trimester.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't put dates on anything, so you never know what that means. You know, second trimester could be.
But I have friends who are showing in their first trimester, so like, I don't know. I'm starting to think she's not really pregnant anymore.
Well, she won't go to see a doctor. She won't leave the hilltop to go to the kingdom to see the doctor. So we won't know.
Yeah. True. All right. Well, I have one news item, and there were a lot of news items that were, you know, over the last several. Obviously, the crossover, which maybe if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about that with you guys. But actually, it's probably worth mentioning that Kirkman mentioned that it would happen sometime in 2018. So it could be the end of this season or season 4 of Fear or the first half of season 9 of The Walking Dead.
It's going to happen on Fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've I think they might be finished filming the season or like in the, like way in the back half, episode 12, 13, something like that.
Yeah.
Because they've been pushed back because of the death of the stuntman.
Yeah.
Everything got pushed back. They would usually be done by this time. But, so I don't think it'll be, it definitely won't be on The Walking Dead. That just seems crazy to me that
anyone
from Fear would come here.
Not only that, but I think I don't want to say ploy because that's the wrong word, but it's a way to boost the ratings on Fear. It makes more sense to bring somebody from Walking Dead over to Fear than it does Fear over to Walking Dead, because Walking Dead has more viewers than Fear, so you're more familiar with those characters. It's going to be a draw to get people to watch Fear the Walking Dead, if only for that episode or two that character is over.
Yeah.
So, and I think it makes more sense to do, to have somebody go to show like a prequel of a character on Fear the Walking Dead rather than reveal the future of a character, because then it's a big spoiler that a particular character is going to survive.
Yeah.
And one of the things we know about Walking Dead is anybody is fair game at any time.
Not really, though.
Well, there's a couple exceptions that Kirkman has come out and said so many times that nobody is off limits, including Rick. I don't buy that at all. And then you've got people like Daryl they're just an AMC and Walking Dead cash cow. And the world would riot if they ever killed off Daryl. So there are people that are off limits, but I think it just makes more sense to show the backstory of a character we already know, like Abraham. especially with the way Fear ended, with them saying they're heading north back into Texas. And we know Abraham's story started in Houston. So like, you've kind of set it up already.
Yeah. I would say that, Abraham is definitely a character that I wouldn't bet against. I said last week that it was Negraham, because I've been trying to build a case that it could be them telling the backstory of Negan. And if you think about it, you know, Negan was a high school, you know, coach, right? So he could have been a coach at the same high school as Madison was. Very easily.
I thought that could be the case if they stayed in California, but since they're going to Texas, it seems really just a missed opportunity not to use Abraham, a character that's really popular. And I mean, I guess it could be Eugene or Rosita, but
yeah.
I don't think they're popular enough, and they're both still on The Walking Dead. So I don't think they would have them filming both shows at the same time. I don't know when Fear starts filming their season, so I don't know how that breaks down. But
yeah, I don't think that they've started yet, because it sounds like, you know, with the season ending and, you know, new showrunners, based on the kind of things that were said at their last Talking Dead, I don't think that, you know, and I know they're working on it, but I don't think they've shot anything, and it's probably still, you know, a few months out before they even start shooting. So, you know, it's probably going to come back again, you know, sometime in the summer, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, Gimple said during Talking Dead, expect to see it more sooner than later. You know, and if you factor into things like you had mentioned, Reese, that they're probably close to wrapping this season. You know, shooting this current season 8 of Walking Dead, the next viable thing that'll happen, obviously, before that, sooner than later, is to begin filming Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah. All right. Last thing, which I didn't actually get into that news item. The Sesame Street had a parody out there, and you know, we just had. Did you guys watch the Robot Chicken one?
I did.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Oh, no, I missed it.
It's out there, Reese. You can watch it on the web, actually, if you look for it. But it's really funny. But today I watched the Walking Gingerbread, which was Cookie Monster and the Crumbies, as they called it. It's kind of goofy, you know, good, I guess good for little kids, but, yeah.
Would kids even get the reference to The Walking Dead? I mean, isn't Sesame Street like, 5-6-year-olds?
One would think.
I guess it's for parents, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, because they had on there a Michonne-looking character, and they called the Cookie Monster Sheriff, but there was also another character that looked like Rick. So, I don't – but they called him – I think they called him Sheriff Lick. anyway, so I don't know who that other character was, if it was like maybe – somebody that was like Daryl or something. I don't know, but Daryl doesn't have a beard, and this character did. So I don't know. Okay. Well, anyway, enough of that. Let's get into finally discussing Mercy. So now we'll go through our ratings of this episode. So I'm going to start with you, Ben. What did you think of Mercy?
For it being a season premiere, I was definitely into it. I was expecting a little bit more, for a episode that was not only a season premiere, but also the 100th episode. But that being said, I wasn't disappointed. I still very much enjoyed the episode. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing where the season goes. And, you know, out of a 1 to 10 rating, I'd give it a solid 8.
Okay. Reese, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed the episode. I have some questions. I have some things that I really didn't like, but I think it was pretty solid. And I'll give it an 8 out of 10 as well.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, knowing how much of a fan I am of The Walking Dead, it's difficult for me to give it a really low score. I loved it, but I didn't love it as much as I had hoped. So in terms of, season premieres, it's probably, I don't know, third or fourth favorite, out of 8 seasons. Not, you know, like middle of the road, I guess. My favorite, you know, season premiere still by far is No Sanctuary from season 5. That to me is like a high point of the show, and the highest rated show too. Anyway, but I gave it a 9.5, and I will call it 9.5 unexpected Weird Al Yankovic songs. All right. So we've got some listener ratings here. So, Ben, why don't you give PB and Zane's rating?
PB and Zane quotes that I would rate it 9 out of 10 Carl's kindness, and also in parentheses, or possibly his stupidity somewhere down the road, which I kind of agree with that last part.
All right, Reese, Dieta's rating.
Dieta gives it 10 out of 10 Negan is going down Rick Grimes style. Exclamation point.
And
yeah, she's excited.
And it's been a long time since we've heard from her. Faith is back, and she said, she gave it 8.5 half-chewed Twizzlers.
Disgusting.
Yeah, and I got a kick out of that. Alana Masterson was talking about how those had been dehydrated and, you know, like weathered to make them, you know, several years old, or at least, you know, how a several-year-old Twizzler would taste. And how
Twizzlers
she was
are already disgusting.
And how she
like Twizzlers.
Oh no.
Are you a Red Vines person?
No, I'm not a licorice person at all. It's gross.
Yeah.
Black licorice I don't like, but red licorice, Red Vines and Twizzlers, I'm totally on board with.
Ugh.
All right. Well, that is it for our listener rating. So now it is time for Awesome Sauce.
Awesome Sauce!
All right. Well, actually, they seem to be in the same order. So let's mix it up a little bit. Ben, why don't you give Dieta's rating? Or sorry, Awesome Sauce.
Sure, certainly. Her awesome sauce is, she says, my awesome sauce is seeing our group fighting back against Negan and the Saviors. It's been a long time coming.
Definitely.
For sure.
Reese, why don't you give Faith's awesome sauce?
Faith says the story structure. I am in love with the disjointed storytelling. They did it in the finale with Sasha, and it was perfect. This was also perfect. Finishing Rick's speech at the end of the episode gave it so much more power.
And PB and Zane, she had an awesome sauce. Rick telling Maggie when it was all over, he was going to follow her. Yeah, and I would like to see that, actually.
Not me.
That was actually one of my personal awesome sauce moments as well.
Cool. All right. Since you brought that up, Reese, do you have any awesome sauce?
Just Rick getting his groove back. season 7 was just such a downer. And they started getting back into it closer to the end, but just this episode was really great. You know, Rick was focused. They had a good plan. So, yeah, just Rick being, you know, taking pictures of Negan when he's lying on the ground. So, yeah, I liked Petty Rick this episode.
Yeah, taking those Polaroids. I guess that was kind of him doing what Negan did to them. You know,
we're going to see that picture down the road. I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
That picture is going to come into play.
In fact,
we have to.
In fact, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Rick taking Polaroids all through the season. All right. Well, my first awesome sauce, and it's the only one in the notes, is not what was in the episode, but what wasn't. And I will say what wasn't was no trash people.
Yeah, agreed.
Don't get used to it. They're going to come back into play.
They'll probably be back next week.
It's a good possibility. Yeah.
Are you a collective or does one lead? I was watching.
I'm almost expecting her to say the line, she puts the lotion in the basket. just the way she talks. It's like, okay. We've had enough.
Yeah, I mean, I had all sorts of problems with those trash people. You know, at first they sounded like some species from, you know, Star Trek: The Next Generation, reminding me of the Packleds, you know, or Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. But people would not sound like them 3 years into an apocalypse. 20 years, maybe. But 3 years, I just can't buy it. I can't buy it. And I haven't been able to let it go. You would think eventually I would let it go, but not with those people.
They suck. Don't
yeah. Yeah. And plus they're duplicitous and, you know, they can't be trusted. So they've got nothing going for them as far as I'm concerned.
But in my opinion, they're no worse than Oceanside.
Oceanside.
I've made no bones. I did not like that episode.
Oh, I didn't like that episode either, but they feel like real people to me.
True.
I don't even know where the trash people come from. They're just, they were born in trash. They should stay in the trash.
They have been affected by the fumes of the trash, I think.
They are actually people who escaped a mental institution in Atlanta and joined forces and became a team or a collective, as you will.
Yeah. Ben, do you have any more awesome sauce?
I do. I have a couple quick notes of a couple of things I really did enjoy. You know, I had mentioned the following Maggie when this is all over. In relation to that, I loved the moment when Jesus claims the hilltop stands with Maggie. You know, it just boosts even more the leadership capability that Maggie has, which is very important to the story, not just in the show, but also in the comics. And I love that they're actually going that route. But on that same note, I also loved just the opening speech, the opening battle speech with Rick, Ezekiel, and Maggie. It was such a powerful speech, and I love the fact that, you know, as another one of your listeners had mentioned, how it's kind of spread out throughout, and it kind of bookends this episode. And it just shows the empowerment of this group. And other than that, I was a big fan of the way they were like stealthily taking out the guards.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
Especially the tree stand.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Reese, what about you?
Simon pushing Gregory down the stairs.
That's another good one. Love that.
You don't even see him fall down the stairs. Just the fact that he got pushed down and you just hear him hit the stairs, the metal stairs. It was great. I hate Gregory.
I love Simon, though. I hate to admit it.
I like him too.
I love Stephen Ogg. So it's every time I see his character on Walking Dead, I just automatically think Trevor from Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
He's so good. He's such a great guy in person too, and he's just I love that character of Simon. I know he's duplicitous and rotten, but I love that character.
Yeah, you've done a few Walker Stalker Con panels, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah.
Stephen Ogg is not one of them, but I have. I do more of the heroes and villains panels for FanFest, so I do a lot of the Flash and stuff because that's more in my wheelhouse with the DC podcast, but I have moderated a panel with Michael Rooker, who, if you're not familiar, was Merle Dixon, Daryl's brother. And let me tell you, that's an interesting experience. Rooker is a trip. And I say that in the best of ways, because it was an interesting experience, but it was so much fun.
I bet. Yeah. He looks like he would be a lot of fun every time I ever see him. Yeah, are you going to Walker Stalker Con Atlanta?
Oh, I wanted to. I had my hotel set up, and I had our mutual friend Jason actually was all ready to put me on panels, especially for Atlanta, because Atlanta is the biggest convention of the year, not just for Walker Stalker, but for FanFest, and who does Walker Stalker and Heroes and Villains. And Jason was ready to put me on stage if I could have gotten there. I had my hotel set up, but unfortunately, time-wise, I couldn't get my airfare set up before the prices went up, and I just couldn't swing it. But hopefully next year, I'll be out to Walker Stalker. I'm still going to I was just in Walker Stalker Philly, and I'll be at Walker Stalker New York, New Jersey in December, since they're pretty local to this area. But hopefully, I'll be at Atlanta next year. So, because Atlanta's the one that gets pretty much close to all the guests, including Andrew Lincoln and Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, that's the only one he goes to, right?
Andrew Lincoln?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dean Morgan is actually coming to New York, New Jersey, which I'm really excited for, because I love JDM, and I'm really excited to meet him.
Well, I know he lives in New York. Like outside of the city, but I know one of our mutual friends, Mark, has been to his candy store, I think, a few times.
JDM owns a candy store?
He does.
That just made him like so much cooler in my book.
Yeah, he owns a candy store. I can't remember the name of it. I'll probably put it in the show notes for this episode, but yeah, he owns a candy store in the town that he lives in. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And I know I think Norman Reedus, that, you know, that's how they know each other. I don't know if he lives in the same town, but I think they live close by. So, yeah. Anyway, have you ever gotten any, Walker Stalker cons, Reese?
Nah, I'm not a con person. It's too many people there. If they could come to my house to talk to me personally, that would be great, but I don't want to go.
Believe it or not, if I'm not a big, and I hate to go off on a slight tangent. I promise I'll make it quick, but
that's okay. Blaine will keep us straight. So,
but Wizard World is way too many people. San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con are way too many people. But for somebody like you, Reese, who's not crazy about the amount of people, next time Walker Stalker comes to Philly, because it'll come to Oaks, which is where it is, I recommend it. It's a very large arena for that, or venue for that con, that there is, even though there are a lot of people there, there is so much, you don't feel crowded at all. It's at the Great Philadelphia Expo Center.
Okay.
Right in Oaks behind, and I know some of your listeners are probably clueless to where I'm mentioning, but, I think it's, Arnold's Family Fun Center in,
Okay.
In Oaks.
Yeah.
So it's very open. So even though there are a lot of people, it doesn't feel full at all. There's plenty of room to move around. You're not constricted. You're not going to feel claustrophobic. And FanFest is great about it because their guests, when they get them, including people like Josh McDermott, Michael Cudlitz, Norman, any of the guests that they get are very fan friendly and interact with everybody.
Maybe I'll try it one year.
So you should next year for when it comes back, and I think it's usually like September. Give it a shot. I'm a little biased to FanFest because I've been working with them for a while, but I don't think you'd be disappointed.
Okay.
And I've yet to go myself. I used to go to cons all the time when I was younger, but haven't since I tied the knot.
Well, Brian, let me tell you about this con called Walker Stalker, and I think you would – never mind.
Blaine.
You should give it a shot next time.
Blaine.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
I'm done.
That's okay. Okay, so just one final awesome sauce that I'll say, and that – with it being the 100th episode, there were quite a few kind of subtle and not so subtle tributes to past episodes in this episode. And the most blatant of them was Carl, who was almost shot for shot with the cold open of the pilot episode, and Rick. He had Rick's hat on when he was, going into the gas station. And, he even looked in the car the same way, looked under the car the same way. It was very faithful. Obviously not the same gas station, of course, because, that was in the Atlanta area and now they're in the DC area.
But isn't it still the same gas station that they shot at originally?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
But it was very close to, it was very similar to the other one.
I actually read somewhere, or maybe somebody told me, that the girl zombie is the same little girl that Rick killed in the first episode.
Yes. I heard that rumor too.
It's been confirmed, actually. Okay. Huffington Post had... is it Huffington Post? That's not the right name.
Huffington
Post. I knew that was wrong. And I'll just say, Huffington Post, had an article about it today. And it was, in fact, I think her name is Addie Miller. She played the zombie girl in the pilot, and she was the zombie. In fact, they said it was the first minor that had ever come back as a zombie in the show. So I thought that was cool. And obviously she's a lot older today than she was then. So
I see you noticed that scene, and I know that was kind of leaked and put out ahead of time for people to watch the shot for shot comparison. And I actually avoided it. I didn't want to watch that until I was watching the actual episode. But out of all the tie-ins back to the original pilot episode, I think the biggest one for me, even bigger than that shot-for-shot scene with Carl, were the zombies surrounding the trailer at the end. that was very reminiscent of all the zombies around the tank.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It was. Yeah, and there were ties into many other episodes, like Carol seeing a graffiti of a flower. That was one thing. I know Rick using, you know, you're going to make me count back to Negan, because that was that's what Negan said to him in the season premiere last season. And there were several others, and it's not at this point, I don't want to go through each of them, but anyway, I thought it was cool. I'm sure many other tie-ins that I didn't pick up will, be uncovered. Probably not just this episode, but, you know, over the season, there'll probably be several others. All right. Well, anyway, let's finally get into Weak Sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
All right. So I'm going to start with the weak sauce this time, just so we can mix it up. And I'm going to do PB and Zane's, because I agreed with this one. She said, Rick shooting at Negan and missing. That was so TV. And to that, I would say, you had a clear shot of Negan, Rick.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
Yeah, that famous, I think what Judy, PB, and Zane was referring to there is, you know, they can hit all the walkers with precision, you know, shooting every time. And, you know, then when it's time to hit a notable person, they can't hit the side of a barn.
And I agree with that. Like, you had a clear shot before. Like, if you had such a vendetta against Negan, why did you not pull the trigger the moment you saw him walk out that door?
I cannot disagree with that. Cannot disagree with that. Ben, why don't you give Faith's weak sauce?
Faith's weak sauce was Gregory getting pushed down the stairs. He is a grade A-hole and should have been stabbed or shot instead. I guess she's got two. Please, the saviors love doing that kind of over the top craziness. Why save bullets now? Oh, it continues into that. But you know what? I we had mentioned already in our awesome sauce that Reese and I kind of disagreed with that.
Yeah, I liked it.
I thought it was a fun moment seeing Simon push Gregory down the steps.
And well deserved, because, yeah, you know, Gregory is a weasel. And it made me wonder if it was an act, like that was a way to make Gregory escape or something.
Escape to do what?
I don't know, but that just give him a way to get back to, you know, the hilltop and, I don't know, be a mole or whatever. Not that they would take him back. I don't know.
No, I think he's just a weasel.
Yeah, I think they were just done with him. And, you know, they didn't think he would survive by himself. They all ran inside, pushed him down the stairs. They all ran inside. So they probably assume he's dead right now.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, he isn't. All right. Reese, why don't you give...
Thanks a lot, Gabriel.
Yeah, speaking of that... why don't you give Dieta's weak sauce?
Okay, Dieta says, Gabriel alone in the dark, or so he thought, hears a voice, which we hear as well, and instantly know it's Negan. Why didn't Gabriel just start shooting where the voice is coming from instead of saying, huh? Not to mention Gabriel deciding to save Gregory for what? He leaves him in the horde of dead as he burns rubber in his car, and she leaves a bunch of smiley faces.
Yeah, I would say that Gabriel, you know, gets the proverbial hat trick this episode, because, you know, he pulled back Rick from, you know, shooting Negan. And, you know, that to me wasn't by itself a weak sauce. But then considering the things that he did after that, you know, he tried to go after, of all people, Gregory. I guess that was his, you know, heavenly kind of you know, the fact that he's a priest, couldn't turn him down. But the first thing that he should have done when he got into that trailer and saw that was Negan, you know, and I checked this, he still had his weapon. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, he may not have had his, you know, pooping pants on, just to make that a slight bit cleaner than what they said on the episode, but he didn't need his pooping pants because he could have just shot Negan and be done with it. Game over. So, Gabriel, you get the Price is Right horn. Well deserved. All right. Do you guys have any weak sauce of your own?
I have one or two quick notes. One of them we had already kind of talked about a little bit, and that's the whole second trimester thing with Maggie. It's you know, I'm not buying I'm not buying that she's pregnant at this point anymore. You know, so that was one of my weak sauces of it. It's like, okay, we get it, but you know, you got to start at least showing at some point. I wasn't crazy about, I understand why they did the shot for shot with Carl, but the scene kind of didn't fit in that episode. I don't get what they did with it. We see a random survivor, which we don't know who he is or what he's doing there. He could be a savior. He could be somebody from another, you know, group that we haven't even met yet. This could be a seed planted for the next season after All Out War is finished. But that scene just kind of didn't fit with me. I don't know why. I understand you did it. You wanted to do a shot for shot, but it didn't fit with me. And my other biggest complaint was we got a 2-hour Talking Dead, but only an hour premiere. That, especially for the 100th episode, like at least give us an hour and 15 to an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was only an hour or seven.
It was an hour and seven. And that's, you're going to do a 2-hour Talking Dead. You got to give us a little bit more Walking Dead.
I wonder if that was, you know, dealing with a lot of complaints from last season about the long episodes. I wonder if that's what it was. But if any, I agree, if any episode deserves an hour and a half, it was this one. And I think it could have benefited from it, you know?
Not even just for the sake that it was the season premiere, but the fact that it was the 100th episode. Like, that's a milestone. There are many shows out there that never make it to that point. You know, so if anything, for that alone, you should have had at least an extended episode.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I also, another one real quick is, I love, I hope I'm not stealing anybody else's in it. If I am, I'm sorry. But you just recently got your hands on all these guns, but suddenly you have massive amounts of ammo to waste on shooting windows.
Oh. Yeah, I heard an explanation for that, but I kind of was like,
what?
When they did that. I didn't get it at first. Now, I heard the reasoning for that could have been that they were trying to take out snipers, you know, and make it difficult for the snipers to be there by, you know, shooting out the windows. But still, I don't know. It did seem like a huge waste of ammo.
That's a huge waste.
Yeah, a ton of wasted ammo in this episode. I mean, Carol and Ezekiel at the end of the episode, there are like six or seven of them, and they just unleash on this one guy, and nobody hits him. He throws the smoke bomb, what is it called? That smoke bomb thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was a smoke bomb. I think it was an actually legit grenade, because he blows the door off of that and lets all the zombies out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it just released all that smoke, but I'm just like, there was that one guy and they're all shooting at him for like 10 seconds and nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the one weak sauce that I had to mention was, because I was expecting it, especially with it being the 100th episode, AMC has relaxed its cursing policy, and we heard 2 F-bombs on Fear the Walking Dead this past season. So I was expecting Negan to unleash his favorite word, but no dice. He did not, and nor did anyone else release an F-bomb. And I was kind of waiting for it, and I didn't get it. So I'll say that was weak. The other weak part, because the Windows thing, I'm glad you mentioned that, Ben, because I thought that was weak as well. I would say it was a bit of, how can I put it? I put this down in what sauce, but I guess it could be what sauce or it could be weak sauce. I found that the story, the way that it was told, was a little hard to follow. And, I figured out, that there seemed to be 3 timelines present, but you kind of going back and forth. As much as I didn't like this effect when it aired, and part of that was because of the way that I watched the season 6 premiere on a phone in a Walmart parking lot. I kept thinking that the black and white portions, like the signal was actually going out on my phone. So I didn't like that at first, but I thought that, like, obviously that one setting, it was obvious that it was, either maybe future or maybe a dream sequence, a possible future, not the actual future.
Although I actually think it's both. And that goes into my theory, but we can talk about that again a little bit later.
The thing I would say to that is if it was a fantasy future, why would Rick have stupid hair like that?
Because you make a very valid point, sir.
Because he has, he has very nice wavy hair, and he had essentially, a buzz cut, maybe slightly longer than a buzz cut, but it was, kind of spiky on top. And I didn't think that was very flattering for Rick. So, yeah. But, yeah, so partially weak, partially
what
sauce, which we occasionally use. All right, anybody else have anything else for a week?
Yeah, well, Rick's future beard, because that thing was just so obviously fake. It was terrible, not just his hair, just his head. In the future, I just didn't like. And some of the dialogue. The woman that was talking to Dwight when everybody was leaving the compound, and she says, I want some bang bang, Dwighty. I want some scream scream. I want some blood. Oh my God, it was so terrible. It's just, I don't know why she was speaking like that. I mean, maybe if Jeffrey Dean Morgan said it, it would be funny, but it wasn't funny coming from her. And, at least Dwight sort of rolled his eyes, but it was just terrible.
Well, 2 possible explanations for that. One was that maybe she was a former trash person. And the other was, it was foreshadowing for what actually happened to her, because I guess that was Morgan that tripped it off. The cars that were going out to go see what was going on with that explosion. She was in one of those vehicles, so she got bloated up, I think.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And the way she was talking, she kind of deserved it, because anyone that talks that way shouldn't live. All right. Well, unless you guys have anything else, it is time to listen to feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
I think that is still my favorite one of our bumpers.
Good old. That's a good bumper to use. That's very fitting.
I know.
Yeah.
I like it. Good old Simon.
I thought that was Negan.
No, that was Simon that said that. Yeah, from The Last Day on Earth, the season finale, when we finally see Negan for the first time. All right. I'm going to let you start off the feedback, Reese. Go out of order a little bit this time. And why don't you read Cheryl's feedback?
Cheryl says, I like this episode. When Jesus rolled his eyes at Gregory coming out of Negan's, to Daryl blowing up to lead the herd, to Gregory being a total jerk and abandoning Father Gabriel at the sanctuary. It was awesome.
Cool. All right. Ben, why don't you read PB and Zane's feedback?
Sure. For a 100th episode, I think it could have been a tad better. Loved the gung-ho opening. I liked the episode. It flew by. They do that when they are good. Gregory just plain sucks. There are times when it doesn't pay to be a good guy. Poor Gabriel. It just doesn't pay to get on board, does it? With an LOL. I hope he has a way out somehow. It was so good to see Daryl, Carol, and Morgan working together. They are the best team. It looks like Daryl trusting Dwight turned out to be a good thing, and I'm so excited the show is back.
Me too.
I think we're all pretty much excited for that.
Yeah. All right. Next is Dieta, longtime contributor to this podcast. I think she was one of the very first contributors of feedback to us. She says, yes, it's officially The Walking Dead season, with a lot of different emojis that some very geeky looking tongue hanging emojis.
I see some with sunglasses and
yeah. All right. She continues. She says, I love this episode. It was so good seeing everybody together fighting the good fight, seeing Carol and Daryl back in action. It was so awesome. The explosions, the horde of dead, the well-thought-out assault on the saviors to bring them down had me jumping up and down. Finally, our group is fighting back. I just hope all of our group makes it through. I'm not ready to say bye to anyone yet. I want to see some saviors go, some dead saviors go, and not the red shirts. Where did everybody go, and why was Negan by himself? Did everybody just run off and leave? Can't wait for the next episode. Yeah, so a couple of things I'll say for that. Yeah, we finally do see a good plan come together. Because not all their plans have been so great in the past.
No.
Definitely not. And the point about, I also noticed the fact that, you know, somehow Negan was the only one that was stranded out there. Well, I guess Gregory was too, but we won't count him. But the rest of them, I guess they all seem to go back into the sanctuary. But, you know, how he ended up by himself, I don't know.
Well, because the rest of his lieutenants are weasels too.
Yeah, of course.
Just my opinion.
Yeah, of course. I was kind of surprised that no one of note died this episode. What about you guys?
And I'm in agreement with that. I thought for the 100th episode, we probably would have gotten at least one significant death.
I didn't think so. After the opener of season 7, I mean, I thought we would get like a Tara level death, but not anything big. Since
I'd count Tara as a significant death, though. Well, I mean, she's one of the regulars at this point. She's a well known character, you know. And I just figured with, you know, going along the lines of the 100th issue, of the comic book. You know, the 100th was a very significant death, and that was the introduction of Negan and the death of Glenn. Just knowing Kirkman, I thought maybe he would have done the same thing with the show and given us a significant death, but I was wrong. Well, no, actually, I was right. We actually did get a very significant death in this episode that a lot of people missed.
Oh?
Yeah. Dale's RV.
Oh!
No, that wasn't Dale's RV.
That's not
the... Are you sure?
No, that's
I'm positive.
Not the, yeah, that's not the same RV, but that RV definitely did need to die because it was in pretty bad shape.
I thought that was Dale's RV.
No. No,
Dale's RV died a few seasons ago.
Oh, well, it was AR. Okay, so that just completely just ruined what I was going for.
Yeah,
oh,
Dale's RV.
That's all right.
Dale's RV never left the farm because it got infested with walkers, and then I think it burned in the fire. Not sure okay, about so the last part, but I know that.
So I was incorrect in it being Dale's RV, but it was the RV they've been traveling with for like the past couple seasons.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so I was still technically right. It just wasn't Dale's RV.
Yeah.
But that RV's been through just as much as some of those characters have. So to see them blow it up, I count that as a significant death. I'm reaching.
Well, I am surprised that, you know, like a recurring character or, you know, even one of the minor like Kingdom or Hilltop characters, you know, didn't die, or like someone like Eric, you know, Aaron's boyfriend, you know, somebody like that didn't die, not in, or Tobin, who always seems to be someone that people chuckle about when his name gets brought up, because he just seems to continue going on. That guy, you know, playing it safe. But yeah, so I guess I'm sure we're going to see deaths coming, and you know, they keep saying that, you know, not like that they want to, you know, end this war without any of them dying. So I don't know about that, though. I think
well, I mean, they're going to get casualties. I think Andrew Lincoln has already confirmed and pretty much said, expect some pretty significant deaths this season.
Yeah, but...
They say a lot of stuff.
Smokescreen.
During season 6, right before that finale, the whole cast, but especially him, they were talking about how they couldn't sleep after reading the script for the finale of season 6, and... Since we know nobody died in that finale, I don't know, you know, what was so emotional about it. He beat the camera in that the end of that season.
Yeah, that's a way to put it.
Is that exactly true? Because I had read somewhere that not only did they film it at that point, but they filmed many versions of it at that point.
Yeah, I don't know what they filmed when. And they lied a lot about what was going on with that.
Well, the many versions was actually confirmed because in the season 7 premiere, you do see other versions of other people getting hit with the bat.
Yeah, but it's a question.
Yeah, but I'm not sure whether they filmed that for the finale of season 6 or whether they filmed that when they started season 7. So,
actually, I think they, I'm correcting myself here. I think they did film it later. Cutlets actually told a story at Walker Stalker Philly about him and Jeffrey Dean Morgan having a conversation, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan saying to Cutlets, did you know it was going to be you at the time? And he was like, yeah, I knew it was me. And this was very early on before they had started shooting. So yeah, I think many of the cast members didn't know who it was going to be until they came back to start filming, except for the people that were going to be taking the beating, which were Steven Yeun and Michael Cutlets.
All right. Well, let's flip a coin. Who wants to take Faith's feedback?
It doesn't matter. Reese, you can have the honors if you want to do it.
Okay. It was a really good episode, but not 100th episode spectacular. I love the old man Rick moments. even though he's not that old, since Judith is maybe 7, she's 6. Loved, loved, loved the long tracking shot as the three groups converge before the big showdown. I understand why Rick missed Negan. His adrenaline was up and he wasn't focused. We all know Michonne would have made that shot in a heartbeat. The overhead shot of the zombies converging on Gabriel and Negan is so reminiscent of the zombies converging on Rick in Atlanta that I feel Gabriel isn't going to be stuck with Negan too long.
Well, hopefully Negan will be the tank zombie.
One of them needs to be dead, but neither one of them will die. But it makes no sense for both of them to survive that.
The thing that really gets me, though, is, you know, he's got the gun. He can shoot Negan and be done with it. And, you know, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, or Negan could just beat him to death like he should. There's no reason to keep Gabriel alive.
I don't know. To a point, maybe I disagree with that. Two heads are better than one when it comes to trying to get out of a situation like that. You're screwed either way if you think about it. You're either surrounded by many, many zombies and you're by yourself trying to escape it, or you're with an enemy and you're going to use them for help, and then you take them out or attempt to take them out.
Well, yeah, I don't mind that. I'm just saying there shouldn't be a situation where they shouldn't be they both need to be trying to kill each other. There's no reason to keep Gabriel alive. There's no reason for Negan to try to keep Gabriel as some sort of hostage, because Rick has already proven that he's not going to cooperate. You know, he didn't cooperate when Daryl was a hostage. He at the end of season 7, he's ready to let Carl be killed. So, you know, there's no reason to keep playing the mind games. This is war. I'm tired of them not killing people when they should.
Yeah, but I mean, playing devil's advocate to that a little bit, I think this is a different situation. Every other situation we've seen Negan has had the upper hand. He's had an out. He doesn't have one this time. He's just as screwed as Gabriel. So I could see him actually, for the good of his own well-being, if only temporarily, keeping Gabriel alive if he thinks it's going to help him escape. Doesn't necessarily mean he intends on Gabriel escaping with him. He's got a scapegoat. He's got somebody he can push in front of him to get out.
Yeah, well, I'd like that. That would make sense to me.
But I can see where you're coming from with Gabriel, because if I was in that situation, I saw Negan and I had a gun in my hand, I'm pulling the trigger.
Yeah. All right. I think it's a good time for us to move into our own notes and feedback. So I will start, okay? So that character that we saw Carl at the gas station interact with, you know, Rick shoots him off, that pretty much, I think that had to be a character from the comic book, wouldn't you say?
Which character is this that we're talking about again?
The one that, you know, said, my mercy prevails over my wrath. From the gas station, yeah.
Again, if it is, I'm not familiar with him. I actually stopped reading the comic after All Out War, because the tone of the comic definitely did change, which is why I had said earlier in the podcast that, in my opinion, it would have been a good point to stop the show.
Yeah.
Because that's when, you know, the tone of the comic changed. So why not the tone of, because I believe in the comic books, after All Out War, Rick kind of takes a step back and he's no longer the main focus of the comics. They're never going to go that route in the show. Rick's going to be the focus. But yeah, if this is a character from the comic books, it could be a seed planted for the future of the show. But if it is, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, and I haven't read that far in the comics, so I have no idea who that guy is.
I believe, okay, spoiler. I believe, and you know, I am not up on the comics either, but I do read a lot about the comics and listen to a lot of podcasts that talk about it in depth. I believe this is a character named Sadiq that's in the comic books. And other than that, you know, I don't know very much about him, but I know that he's around for a long time and may still be around now. So I'm assuming that's who it is, but I don't know for sure. Reese, what do you got on a sort of notes we haven't discussed yet?
I'm getting a little tired of Ezekiel. I like Kari Payton, and I watch Teen Titans Go, so, you know, he's a special place in my heart. But I cannot take him seriously. And maybe it's just the fact that all of these, the trash people and Ezekiel, they're all here together. So it's just really like cartoonish. But every time he spoke in this episode, I was just like, oh my God, just shut up. Somebody shoot him. Make Jerry the leader. King Jerry. I'm just so, oh, I can't with him.
Dude.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jerry's great. I love Jerry.
Love Jerry. He's actually my, we have a pool going in a different group as to who could potentially be the first major death of the season. And unfortunately, I did put that fate on Jerry.
Oh, Jerry.
I hope it doesn't happen because Cooper Andrews is, again, you know, kind of going back to people I've met from doing these cons. But Cooper Andrews is one of, no joke, is one of the nicest and lovable guys you will ever meet. He's just like his character in Walking Dead.
Oh, I love him. He's so great.
But I love Ezekiel. He's probably, he really grew on me in season 7, and I'm a huge fan of his character.
I wasn't a fan of his character that first episode until he explained himself to Carol. You know, that kind of did it for me. And, you know, ever since then, I've been a fan of his character. But
I like that. I like when he drops the King Ezekiel persona.
Yeah.
I just don't like when he starts speaking in his Shakespearean language when everybody else, because I don't know why everybody else is standing there listening to that. I'm like, Rick is giving this speech, and then Ezekiel steps up, and I'm like, oh God, he's quoting Shakespeare. What is it? Henry V, I think it was.
Henry V, yeah. Yeah. But you know what, though? As somebody, if I put myself in that situation and I had a choice of living in Alexandria, Hilltop, or the Kingdom, you know what? Granted, I'd probably go to Alexandria because they have running water. But, you know, I would most likely go to the Kingdom. And it's for that, because while it might be annoying to some people, to other people such as myself, in such a grim environment, it's kind of an escape. You know, to pretend that you're somewhere else and living in a different time, or you're pretending to be somebody that you're not in a world that kind of doesn't exist anymore. So I would enjoy it, honestly. I would probably try and be Jerry's right-hand man. since Jerry's already Ezekiel's.
Yeah.
You know, I would want to be a knight. I would think that would be, you know, if you can't live your old previous life anymore, why not live another one? And to be a knight, that would be amazing to me. I would probably go there.
Yeah.
I'd pick up some cobbler and then go back to Alexandria.
And a pomegranate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that cobbler looks pretty good at the Kingdom. And
did you see, sorry to interrupt, but on the note of, on Talking Dead, a bunch of us in the group, when Chris Hardwick kept bringing out all the different cast members, so he said like he had like the entire cast there. I kept asking throughout the entire episode, really? Where's Jerry? Really? Where's Jerry? And finally, in the last like 30 seconds of the show, he came out pushing a cobbler cake for the 100th episode.
Yeah. It looked like he got a standing O. I don't know if he did.
Of course he did. He's Cooper Andrews.
Yeah.
He's Jerry.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments from the episode was, dude, sternum. And he gives that, you know, what was it? An arm pad or something that's,
yeah,
you know, big enough that it could be, you know, completely protecting Enid.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think I mentioned the my mercy prevails over my wrath, and then we see in, you know, one of those sequences there with Rick and the very irritated eyes, which, like, I'm assuming that there were, you know, I mentioned before that there seem to be three timelines, and I'm guessing the one with the irritated eyes is something like either from, you know, episode 8 or 16.
If it goes along with my theory, which I kind of hope I can kind of dive into a little bit at this point, I think it's coming probably mid-season, and I think it's due to a very significant death. And I think it's one that will come very close to, if not definitely will, break Rick again. And I have a theory on who that death is. And if you would like me to tell you, I can tell you. If not, I can reserve it for later.
Why don't we table it for right at the end? And I'll just jot it in the notes for the end, and we'll talk about it then. So I just made a little note. I wouldn't be surprised if you're right that it is something significant. And I also, especially with Rick making it a point to say that, whatchamacallit, that he wanted to kill Negan and that he was gonna kill Negan himself, and it didn't happen, and, you know, he didn't end up carrying it out this episode. I wouldn't be surprised if that has something to do with Negan in the end. So, and I
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and beyond that, I don't want to say too much more because it does get, you know, it does happen in the comic book. But, you know, things could definitely end up different in the TV show, but I tend to think not. I tend to think that the thing that I'm hinting at is going to happen in the same way.
I know you had mentioned the comic book, and I know that, you know, Negan's fate has been sealed in the comics. I did not read that far, so I don't know who is responsible for it. And I'm kind of intentionally not diving back into it because I kind of don't want to know. Even though the show has proven many times that it will divert from the comic book and the path that the comic book takes. I mean, you look at two particular characters right now that are on a lot of borrowed time when it comes to the comic book, that namely being Carol and Judith, you know, two characters who are long dead in the comic books.
Carol doesn't even see it. It's almost just a different character at this point. Like,
yeah,
just a person with the same name.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's very easy to do that with her character because, again, she doesn't survive in the comic book. So you kind of have carte blanche with what her character becomes having survived. But, you know, as far as Negan goes, one of the things I absolutely love about Negan, other than the fact of how brilliant I think JDM portrays the character, I honestly can't think of anybody better who could have portrayed this character in the show. And I was so thrilled when he got announced to do it. But one of the things that's brilliant and is really makes a good, evil person is that, yes, Rick is that person who says, you know, I will kill him. And Rick probably has more reason than any to kill Negan. But there are so many other people who have just as big a reason to kill this character. Daryl has a reason. Carl has a reason. Dwight has a reason. You know, there's so many people. Maggie has a reason. Eugene has a reason. There's so many people when you can build that many people around one character who have that personal vendetta to the point where any one of these people could be the one to end Negan and you're satisfied, yeah. That is the mark of a good evil person. That is the mark of a good protagonist.
Yep.
And I'd be just as satisfied if any of those people fit. I think it would almost be more satisfying if it was somebody other than Rick.
Okay.
Sorry.
No. Don't be sorry. Reese, what else do you got?
What else do I have? See, a lot of my notes was just trying to keep the timeline straight. That's mostly what it was. Just trying to keep the timelines straight. I'm wondering if future Rick was actually future Rick and not understanding why Rick aged like 30 years. Judith is 6. Michonne is still, I don't know. She ages backwards. I don't know what happened. And we don't see Carl's face, so I have no idea. Like what his deal was, but
his eye grew back.
Yeah. So I want to know whether that is the future or whether when Rick is crying, the red eyed Rick is, if that's what he's like dreaming about, because it makes no sense as a time jump.
That's my theory is I think this is something he's imagining as he's going through a very difficult time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be. It definitely could be. And you notice we don't see anybody else in that future. Like, we see Michonne and Carl and Judith, but we don't see anybody else. And that's I don't know what to call it, but the thing that they go out into in that future, you know, it looks like an Alexandrian house, but they step out, you know, into, you know, the, what looks like an old country house from like, you know, 1720 or something. And clearly it's like a
colonial estate.
Yeah.
It looks like the hilltop. It looks like a house from Alexandria to the hilltop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's another thing that kind of leads me to believe that this flash forward is not anything real. I think this is a, you know, Reese, as you had mentioned, you know, Michonne is the same age. He's very much older. Judith is only 6 years old. I think this is an amalgamation of many different things. I think this is bits and pieces of different lives and different memories all into one that he's imagining as I mentioned, he's going through this very difficult time.
Yeah, I tend to think that you're right. Do you have anything else, Ben?
The only other thing I have is, and it's very quick note, is I was very happy to have everybody finally disproven that Edid is not a spy.
Didn't we already know that?
We did, but
thought she was a spy?
There were still many people online going to the end of the season that were like, Enid's still a spy, I want to see her become a spy.
Really?
She's not a spy. She's firing guns at the Saviors just like everybody else. She's not a spy. Like, let's put that to rest.
I cannot agree with you more. The discussion of her being a spy just sets me off, because there's nothing she's ever done other than being an oddball kid makes anything to suggest that she's been a spy of the wolves or, you know, the Saviors or who else. You know, it's just, I think it's crazy for her to be considered a spy. I think, and I even, one of the other podcasts that I've guested on, still, I'm curious to see, their episode this week to see if they're finally relenting from the spy issue, because I'm telling you, nothing drives me crazier than any kind of discussion of Enid being a spy. So
yeah,
I 100% agree with you, Ben.
The spy thing seems to be based on a misunderstanding of her dialogue. she was talking to Carl. Was it in season 6?
Yeah, JSS.
Yeah, she's talking to Carl and she makes a comment, and I forget exactly what she says, but it's a misunderstanding of her dialogue that all of this spy stuff still exists, because I was over the Enid is a spy thing like a long time ago.
I was as well. So I don't get it. And I was actually incorrect. I have one other note. It was just the top of my speech, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
The only other thing I noted about this episode, too, is in the scene where Rick is calling out the lieutenants of Negan, you know, saying, this is your one opportunity to surrender. We'll let you live. You know, you can walk away from this. This is the first example with his lieutenant, Gavin, that we are kind of seeing dissension in the ranks a little bit. We already know where Dwight stands. It's still up in the air, at least in my opinion, where Eugene stands in all of this. But, you know, right as we're getting to the heyday, you know, Gavin says to Rick, like, all right, maybe we should take a breather here for a second, because his life is now on the line. He's thinking about this.
Well, Gavin seemed like the one that was really not into all of this savior stuff anyway. You know, he went to the kingdom. He's the one that tried to keep the peace and everything.
Yeah.
So he seemed really like a guy that was like beaten down and wasn't really into the Negan thing as much as, you know, as we see some of the other saviors.
Yeah, I can see him being the first one out of all of them, again, with the exception of Dwight, because we know where he stands at this point, to cut tail and run.
I would agree.
And kind of an abandoned Negan.
I would agree. And it's funny that we see this Regina kind of, how come we haven't seen her before?
Yeah,
she's an easy character. She's an easy character to kind of write off.
His right-hand woman was like Arat. Arat, something like that.
I think Arat is on another show.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it is.
I liked her.
I think she's a character that you can kind of very quickly introduce, that when this all starts to play through and we finally see one of Negan's lieutenants taken out, she's the one to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Ben, just to agree with you about Gavin, I think he's like the one somewhat reasonable leader of the saviors, and like you said, you know, seemed to go out of his way to, you know, come up with that deal with the kingdom. And I think if it had been, say, Simon that had been dealing with the kingdom, things would have been quite a bit different.
Oh yeah, because Gavin, when it came to dealing with the kingdom, was all about keeping the peace and making sure everything went smoothly, whereas Simon was all about intimidation, and as is Negan and everybody else. But I think this is, you know, again, we're starting to see dissension in the ranks, and a lot of people probably don't realize this too, but at least in my opinion, having gone back and rewatched the episode, we're starting to see, although he doesn't show it, I think we're starting to see cracks in Negan's armor. If he was as confident as he was in the numbers that he had, he would not have allowed them to say, he would not have told them, go back, you know, make hay or whatever it is, or make wheat or whatever it is that you do. If he was that confident, he wouldn't have given them the opportunity to turn around and run. He would have done the deed and finished them off right there. So I think we're starting to see a little crack in Negan's armor at the same time.
And what do you think about Eugene? Any thoughts about him?
I think this is my theory, and I know some people don't agree with this. Some people say that he is Negan, and he's so far Negan, as he has said. But I think there is an ulterior motive to Eugene. This is kind of a spoiler to anybody who has read the comic, or anybody who hasn't read the comics. But although it might not be as much of a spoiler anymore with the way this premiere went, because leading up into the end of season 7, I always thought Eugene was important to the story because he's the one that shows them how to make ammunition. You know, he shows Alexandria and the kingdom how to make ammunition, but apparently ammunition is at a surplus.
It's endless.
It is. So that might not even be important to the story anymore. So leading up to that, I thought Eugene was still on the side of Alexandria and was just doing what he could to survive and maybe be a mole. But now knowing that they just don't care about the ammunition storyline anymore, I could be totally wrong and he's turned traitor.
Yeah. I mean, I always, especially in season 7, they completely just dropped that whole ammunition, storyline. And I tend to think that ammunition is going to become very important, especially when they're shooting 15,000 rounds at windows.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they dropped the storyline. I think they just condensed it down to one bullet for Rosita. They kind of condensed the storyline a little bit because of the path they had chosen for Eugene instead.
I guess they've never heard of economies of scale.
But that's part of why Negan took Eugene, right? I thought that he took Eugene because he wanted him to help make bullets.
That's exactly why he took him.
Yeah, so for him to be there and to not do that, to do things like, what was he doing? Putting the metal on the zombies on the fence? Like, yeah. He's doing, like, really... I don't think the metal on the zombies on the fence was very smart, but okay. That's all he's done.
All that he wanted, it seemed, was to know if Eugene was a smarty pants. You know, I think to replace Fat Joey, because without Fat Joey, Skinny Joey is just Joey.
I love that line.
I know.
But I mean, you know, going to my point about Eugene and how I think there's an ulterior motive. Let's take a look back and look at how long he lied to Abraham and Rosita about who he was. And, you know, faked his backstory for so long before it finally came out the truth about who he really was. He's doing the same thing all over again with Negan to adapt. And I think it's eventually going to turn around and that we're going to find out that Eugene is still a team player.
I think Eugene will probably try to come back to Rick in the end. I don't think Eugene can come back to the group, to Rick's group. I don't think he can be a part of the group anymore, because if you can't have somebody a part of your inner circle who's willing to turn on you whenever they think they see something better. So, and you already have Dwight over there being a spy. So how exactly is Eugene spying? What do you need him for if you have Dwight?
Sending Dwight or sending Eugene to Negan's side could also be a way to tip the scale. Or not tip the scale, but balance the scale. Knowing that Dwight was going to turn on Negan, this is the way that, like, okay, we've now swapped players.
And if Eugene is just there to help Negan, you really can't have... I think Eugene is probably going to be able to redeem himself in death, but I don't think he's going to be here long term.
Okay. Yeah, I can kind of see that. I don't think he's there intentionally to help Negan. I think he's just adapting to his situation. You know, he's there, so he kind of has no choice, so... What else do you do is you adapt and you become Negan and you help.
Utterly, completely, and stone cold Negan.
Yeah. I mean, he's a coward. I mean, he's made no bones about that.
Yeah. And that's no longer interesting to me. We already went through the coward thing. You know, he was supposed to be getting back, sort of turning over a new leaf with when he was showing Abraham that he had sort of stepped up a level. So... You know, I'm done with the Eugene as a coward and, you know, he needs to be protected thing. We're too far into the apocalypse for that.
Yeah. If you haven't manned up at this point, you're never going to.
Yeah. I've got a couple more things. If you guys don't, if you do, speak now.
I've pretty much gone through all my notes.
All right. Well, one thing I want to bring up is, you know, Rick says in his speech that, you know, only one person has to die. And that's, of course, you know, he doesn't mention him by name, but it's obviously, you know, Negan he's speaking of. But that's not really true, because we saw a lot of saviors die in this episode. We see, you know, several of them, you know, die outside the sanctuary, you know, that they were scouts and, you know, ones that were kind of watching around. We see, you know, Rick kill one of them. We see, I think this was later, but we see Daryl kill one of them. We see Morgan, you know, kill him. And, you know, we also see them take out the guys on the roof. And, of course, you know, with the explosion, all the ones that were going out to see the other explosion, they obviously died. So a lot of them died. So it's so I think Rick was not exactly truthful with that statement.
Well, they didn't have to die. They could have just...
Like the guy that died via the walker that that Rick let loose, you know. Well, first Rick stabs him, and then, you know, lets the walker loose to eat him. You know, that guy didn't have to die per se.
It's almost like you couldn't have made it any more obvious unless you said nobody else has to die. Cut to scene of tree stand guy getting shot and falling.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I just say, the Rick saying nobody has to die, or only one person has to die, sounded like a line straight out of Game of Thrones and Battle of the Bastards, when Jon Snow is talking to Ramsay and he says nobody has to die, just one of us. And so I just kept going back to that. I'm like, are they copying Game of Thrones dialogue now? So I couldn't get it out of my head. And it was just way too similar. And
very good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing that got brought up, it was very thematic, was this whole thing about it not being about Rick. And of course, that you have to contrast against the season finale of last season with Negan and what he says.
You ever hear the one about the stupid little prick named Rick who thought he knew shit but didn't know shit and got everyone that he gave a shit about killed? It's about you.
I get a kick out of that. It's about you.
I absolutely love Negan. I can't deny it. I smile every time he says his lines. And it's a combination. I love the character and I love the actor that portrays him. So just hearing that line, even like going into the premiere when he talks about, like, you want to compare pricks and, you know, see whose is bigger. And he's like, mine is.
Yeah.
Like, it's so great. I love it.
Yeah, he's got that, you know, that, of course, he's got that lean back. But the way he just, you know, kind of leans back and gives that smile. And even, you know, to Gabriel, you know, who's got a big gun, and, you know, he takes the offensive there and, you know, tells him that, you know, asks him if he's got his, you know, what pants on. And, yeah. You know, just really. He's funny. He's a funny character. He is amusing. I mean, when he's brutal and, you know, like there was a point, early on in season 7 where I got way too much of him, but I am back to love to hate him in a kind of, you know, hate that I love him kind of way, but. I think that's it for what I wanted to talk about. So, and we've been going for quite a while, so let's try to wrap it up. So to submit your feedback to us, several different ways. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, and that is a great way to submit your audio as well as submitting text to us. It on that page is SpeakPipe widget, and you can also use the voicemail line, which is 304-837-2278. But most people give us their feedback on the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And then we also have been experimenting and gotten a little bit of feedback this way. We just started this. using our Gmail account, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. Deadline for submitting feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode is aired. We also can get some feedback and interact with you on Twitter using the Walking Dead GSM handle. And I know Ken from Chicago, we hear a lot from you on there. And you tweeted something to me on my Star Trek GSM account that I had to react to. Something that was part of my weak sauce last night when we recorded. But anyway, it's been a long time, actually, since April that we've gotten any iTunes reviews. So we would love to get some. That you can find all of the Golden Spiral Media podcasts by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple or /iTunes, both work for iTunes, which is, of course, now called on our phones Apple Podcasts. To find out other ways to support us, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. So I haven't forgotten about Ben's little prediction, but before we get to that, the next episode is titled The Damned. That's season 8, episode 2. We don't know who's written it, but it is directed by Rosemary Rodriguez. And I believe she directed at least one from last season. The description from AMC.com is as follows. The plan involving Alexandrians, Kingdomers, and Hilltoppers unfolds. As Rick continues to fight, he encounters a familiar face. Who could that possibly be?
Lori.
Oh, God. Lori! I hope not.
Coral!
I hope not. All right, Ben, you've got the podium. What is your prediction?
I've got the final moment.
You've got the second to last final moment.
Gotcha. I think my prediction, and honestly, I would be unaffected if it actually comes to light. But I think one of the characters I had mentioned earlier is going to die in this season. I think it is a character who is very important to Rick. I think it is a character who is in his imagination flash forward or flashback or whatever we're calling it, if that is the case. And it is one of the characters I had mentioned earlier is on borrowed time. I think this season we are going to see the death of Judith.
What?
And I think it's going to drive Rick to the breaking point, or literally to the verge of the breaking point where he is going to be very close to broken. Let's not forget, Negan knows about Judith. He spent the day with Judith and Carl. He knows how to get to Rick. If he is desperate to break Rick again, Judith is the way to do that. And if you want to prove that Negan is as nefarious as we think he is, he's going to kill Judith or have Judith killed. I hate to say it because the death of a child in a TV show sucks. But again, comic book spoiler, Judith is long dead. Judith died with Lori.
I only have one thing to say.
That's not true. That's impossible.
I didn't have that one on my soundboard. I had to go look for it.
I give you a reason. Yeah, but that definitely is indeed, did. I think that's my prediction. I think my prediction is that this season we are going to see the death of Judith.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you're correct with that, because I think that would be a death that, you know, would cause those tears. And
I think it could only be one of four people: Judith, Carl, Michonne, or Daryl, to get Rick to cry like that. So, you know, could be Judith, I guess.
Yeah. I would just lean more towards Judith, just because we had that scene too in the beginning of this episode where we see him have that moment with Judith. And we know that these moments are all important for a reason. You know, you focus back on season 7. It's one of those typical TV tropes, is where if you get a focus on a secondary character for a long, more so of a focus than you usually do, usually means that character's not going to be around very much longer. We got that with Ben at the Kingdom, with him and Morgan. We got a big focus on Ben throughout the episode, and by the end of that episode, Ben was no more. I think we saw that moment with Rick and Judith, and I think that's setting up something along the lines of something's going to happen to Judith.
Yeah, I mean, and of course we've seen that kind of trope over and over again on this show, and you know, it does get kind of tiresome. You know, let's get Beth a bunch of episodes, and then let's kill her off. You know, let's give a prominency to Herschel, and then let's kill him off. And let's actually give T-Dog some dialogue, and then we'll kill him off. You know, so. Yeah, and unfortunately, it does kind of fit. I mentioned that the quote about from the Quran that this other character, you know, which I think is Sadiq, says, "My mercy prevails over my wrath." To me, that's got to mean that he doesn't kill Negan, that he actually gives him mercy and probably throws him in that cell. Just to correct you, Ben, Negan is not dead in the comic book.
Actually, I know after all that war, he does survive. He is taken prisoner. But I think since that point in the comic books, he has been killed.
Okay. Well,
I could be wrong about that. This was something somebody had told me. So I could be very wrong about that, but I think since that time he has been killed.
We're both looking it up. I can.
Yes, we are. You can hear the clicking of the keys. it's going to be a spoiler for myself if I look it up and I see. If you go to his. Oh no, he's still alive in the comics. His status in the comics is still alive.
Yeah,
whoever told me something about a different told me wrong.
Yeah, they led you astray. That's what I thought, yeah. That he was still alive in the comic book. So anyway, I tend to think that whole thing was a hint to what we're eventually going to see. Now, what I don't know, because I don't read the comic book, so I only know the broad strokes, is how that transpires and how Rick changes his mind from, you know, insisting that he's going to kill Negan to not killing Negan, like intentionally not killing him. I don't know.
If it follows the comic, it's pretty much, because this part I do remember, he pretty much keeps Negan alive and locked up because he wants Negan to see how much he was holding back his people. Like how much more his people could thrive as a community without him. So he intentionally keeps him alive so that Negan can rot in jail and see that for himself.
They're going to have to do a lot on the show to make me believe that Rick would keep him alive, because that just feels like Robert Kirkman didn't want to kill the character, so he had to come up with something to keep him alive. With some reason to keep him alive, because it makes no sense to keep him alive on the TV show after everything he's done, even so far, so.
No, I agree with that. And I think the way the show has been progressing, especially knowing that the comic could go on and on for years and the show will not. The show will eventually run its course. And as much as I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan playing that character, I think it makes more sense you have to kill the character.
Who's Negan?
Or Abraham.
I loved Abraham.
Well, you might be getting him back on Fear the Walking Dead.
That's very, very true.
All right. Well, I say let's wrap it up. So, Reese and Ben, thank you for coming on and to do it on pretty short notice, because I only put it out there last night that I needed someone to come on. So I'm pleased that I was able to get both of you, and I think this turned out great. So love to have you guys come back at some point, maybe not together or maybe together. Who knows? But
what are you trying to say, Brian?
Let's start a new podcast.
We talk too much when it's the three of us.
No,
together.
That's not what I mean at all. I mean, it would be kind of funny if the only time you guys would ever come on would be together. It'd be kind of funny. Yeah, that's all I meant. But yeah, I'd love to have you both come back either together or separately.
I would definitely be down. This was a lot of fun talking about this. And, you know, as you mentioned, even though it was short notice, all three of us are pretty experienced podcasters at this point. So it's, you know, it comes a second nature to us to do this pretty, you know, at a whim.
Yeah. All right. Reese, why don't you give another plug to your podcast?
Oh, go to iTunes, search for The Introverted Nerd Watches and catch up. I'm only on my 13th episode. So, well, you don't want to watch these episodes of Saved by the Bell anyway. Just listen to my podcast and just start watching when I tell you to. And you can follow me on Twitter at TI Nerd Pod and on Instagram at The Introverted Nerd.
And Ben, one more plug.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, the podcast network that I help create is at, you can be found at nextlevelradioonline.com or on Facebook, facebook.com/nextlevelradioonline. But if you're a fan of the DC shows, as I had mentioned, and you watch them and you want to check out that podcast, you can do so. It's called DC Primetime. All of our podcasts are available on iTunes and Google Play. But DC Primetime does have its own Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/DC Primetime.
Very cool. And normally we play slightly canned outro, but I can't play that this week because I don't have Ruthie. So I'll just say, all right, that's it for this episode. So until next time, I'm Brian, and thank you guys. Say who we are. Go ahead, say who you are again one more time.
Oh, I'm Ben Beck.
Oh, and I'm Reese.
And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. Bye for now.
Bye.
So long.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.